Welcome to Chain Attack. I'm your host, Trevor, and I have been playing Songs of Conquest, quite a bit of it, actually. And I suck at it. I'm awful.
I'm Jay, and I have purchased Songs of Conquest, and I have thought long and hard about playing it.
I have played, my name is Josh, and I have played the requisite 5 hours of Songs of Conquest. I would happily play more. I also suck at it. But I've been sucked into Cosmic Wheel Sisterhood, and so, you know, this Witch Congress better go right, or I'm going to be ticked.
The funny thing is that Jay is the most likely to enjoy Songs of Conquest,
and he's
also the most likely to be successful at it.
What's the name of this witch game again, Josh?
You mean the one that I'm playing right now?
Stop playing it, Josh.
What is it?
The Cosmic Wheel Sisterhood. It's about
Cosmic Wheel Sisterhood.
Future space witches. I just love the description as much as anything. Oh, jeez.
I assume you're playing mainly on your Steam Deck.
Yes, it is. It is highly Steam Deck compatible. And it's the funniest thing because, like, it's like a tiny step removed from just pure interactive fiction, right? Like, it just has a linear story. Choices do seem to matter. But a lot of the mechanic is you end up crafting your cosmically powered tarot cards. And then a lot of times you do readings with these tarot cards. And so it ends up resulting in some, like, freaky situations where you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that card just got pulled. And what does it mean? You know? It has completely sucked me, and it's completely ridiculous.
That's amazing.
It took my attention off of Cobalt Core, because that's the other game I was playing a ton of, which I think I told you guys about already.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a Slay the Spire in space game.
I need to see if I can find the name of the game. Anyways, I'll look for it. They're one of my friends. Oh, okay, there we go. Have any of you heard about a game called Balatro? That's how.
Oh, yes, Balatro, where it's like, it's kind of a roguelike, but like you're making poker hands, right?
Yes.
Spell that.
Balatro.
Yes.
I bought it on sale the other day.
So one of my friends is like obsessed with this game and playing a ton of it. It's evidently in some countries' stores, it's like it has like limited access because it has some relations to poker, and so it's considered like a gambling game, even though there's no gambling.
Like, yeah, I haven't played a ton of it yet. Like, I maybe have played an hour or so. And the only reason I haven't gotten obsessed with it is like I feel like it doesn't have a story.
Mm.
And clearly, whatever bizarre creature I am, I need a story.
So I go there to the page for Balatro, and it says, similar to games you've played, Backpack Hero and Rogue Book.
Oh my gosh, Trevor's dead already.
I may or may not be investing 200 hours in this game in the next 2 weeks.
I mean, recent reviews, all reviews are all overwhelmingly positive. So, the poker roguelike. Anyways, it's one that, if I were a person, I mean, it's a game I'm considering buying or not.
If you actually used your Steam Deck ever for anything.
No, well, come on now. I don't have a Steam Deck. I'm not rich like you, Josh.
You mean you're not foolish like me. It's different.
I'm like a 6-year-old with a wallet, not a toddler with a wallet like Josh.
Oh, interesting. So on that page, it tries to sell me a bundle of Balatro and Backpack Battles, which is a brand new game that just came out this month.
I also own Backpack Battles and have not played it yet.
That is clearly a stealing of the idea of Backpack Hero.
Oh yeah, big time. Like, it's just slapping a little more anime vibe on it, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah, in fact, it's sort of offensive to me how badly they have just stolen the idea.
It's not the same developer?
No. It looks like it might be the same publisher? No, they're not related in any way. They just happen to be in a bundle that Steam has made. There's a bundle with Balatro and Backpack Battles together, but they're not related.
So news with the gaming world, I guess. The next wave of privateer press items have a release date, and the Orgoth have a cadre that is releasing on April 4th. The Shadowflame Shard have an army expansion, and then there's also Orbeez coming out for the Shadowflame Shard.
Shadowflame Shard are...
They're the Mecha Legion of Everblight.
Okay. Still waiting for a faction that I'm gonna like.
You might find this. I guess I'm curious what your reaction to this is gonna be. So, I'll post this in the Chain Attack Discord miniatures channel. I'm assuming you guys haven't seen this, but there is concept art for the new Butcher in the new edition.
Ooh, exciting. Okay.
And they're doing something kind of fun, I guess. So they're...
I've lost track. Isn't the new edition like far in the future?
I don't know if I'd say far.
Okay.
But they're doing a wave of what they call apotheosis casters. And really, as near as I can tell, all that means is that they're all going to have 50 millimeter bases and be intended to be like these impressive sculpts and stuff like that.
Okay.
So
we're not getting Harbinger 2.0 is what you're telling me.
Well, we don't even have Menoth.
Yeah.
Currently.
In the future, there is no Menoth. Okay, so this is just concept art.
Yes.
Dude, he's put on as much weight as me.
This will be good though. I'll do a couple other.
I do like his like hyper scully axe.
I will say that is probably the model that I've found the most interest in thus far.
So I'm sure this is going to surprise you, but there are nerds on the internet that are big mad over.
Sorry, big mad got me. Okay, I'm listening.
Over this. This concept art, because if you look up in the right hand corner, you'll notice a little faction symbol, and that faction symbol is for Orgoth. And so the Butcher in the storyline has forsaken, well, I think it's more that Kador forsook the Butcher, and
that's why he's betrayed.
Yeah,
that's why he's Orsus. Okay.
the betrayed.
Yes, exactly. So lots of Kador players who are not happy that their favorite caster is now an Orgoth.
Haha, suckers, if you'd waited like me, you could have found out after the fact.
There you go. here's a couple other that might pique your interest. So here's a picture of the mercenary Kruger, Wrath of Blightergast.
So I've seen this model before. Okay. I'd not seen the Butcher.
Oh, that is a cool freaking model.
Yeah, but I've seen the Kruger model, and the model's amazing. I don't care for Kruger.
Yeah.
Is Blightergast the... It's like the worm or whatever, right?
He's one of the dragons, one of Torek's children.
Is this a new faction?
Is
there going to be a Blightergast faction?
We don't know.
Mercenary.
Yeah, he's a mercenary.
Oh. Yeah, see, I don't care about Kruger, so, and it's not a faction I can play, so...
So I saved this last one for you, Josh.
Oh, baby. I'm so excited. Okay.
This is Emperor
Carver. The Emperor. Yes.
Ultimus Esquire III and Warboar MMD 47.
I mean, the Warboar is much cooler than Emperor Carver Ultimus Esquire III. But, and so wait, are they minions still? Or like, I'm sorry.
There's no minions
there's
anymore.
No minions anymore. Yeah.
It's all mercenaries. So he's a mercenary.
Interesting.
Mercenary. Anyways, with his war beast.
I thought it would be interesting to get some reactions from you guys on that stuff.
I mean, I'm a big fan of all of these models. The problem I'm not interested in Orgoth. The other two were just mercenaries. If you'd come out and said Kruger is the new caster for the Blightergast faction, and here's a bunch of pictures of the Blightergast faction, and it happened to be something that I liked, that would have had me. And then the next one, same problem, right? You're like, here's a cool model but it's not a faction. It's just a mercenary that you would add to another faction. So none of these bring me in. Yeah, I'm still in holding pattern, waiting for a faction that I have interest in. And it feels like we're getting pretty far into the release cycle at this point. I just thought we would see more factions by now.
Yeah. I mean, they do have a pretty good, I don't know, they're starting to hit critical mass of factions available, although it is, you know, there's still big gaps on what people might be interested in. So I can appreciate that.
Maybe haven't asked you this for a while, but like, how are sales doing? Like, how
started off fairly slow and they've picked up quite a bit. I wouldn't say fairly slow. I don't know. I mean, it's difficult when the game launches and there's two factions.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah. It's hard to compare.
Yeah. But I would say that it's doing fairly well right now. Let's do real quick some War Machine gossip / drama just for like a true trip in the throwback machine.
Okay. I mean, I'm so far removed that anything you say is going to totally catch me off guard.
Sure. So the WTC is done a ruling, I think, where they have said that if there is a model that is not yet released, but we have the stats for it, then people can play with a proxy of the model as long as it's clear what the model is representing.
Wait, and so, who decides whether it's clear?
I mean, the judges, I guess. But it's no different than when we went in the past and there was like,
oh my gosh,
cool, you guys are playing with, you know, kit bashed Coke cans or something.
right.
and then there are some people who are not pleased with this turn of events.
What a joke. what does this, I don't understand why they do this. What value does this present to the event?
Wait, am I missing a picture? Is there a picture of these?
No.
Kit-bashed Coke cans? Okay, sorry.
It hasn't happened yet.
Okay. But it will, you're saying.
I mean, we could probably pull up pictures from years past of kit-bashed things where people were like, I'm not sure what that is.
Yeah. Anyways, there's our little throwback. Old man talking about a game they don't play anymore.
Yes.
So let's have old man talking about a game that we have played.
Alrighty.
Oh man, that was pretty smooth, dude. I know that it ruins the segue to comment on the smoothness of it, but smooth.
So there is a new game that came out recently that goes by the name of Daybreak. It is a cooperative game. The two developers of it, where is this info? Matt Leacock and Matteo Menapace.
Which Matt Leacock is famous for Pandemic.
Yes.
And the other name, this is kind of his first, this is kind of his breakout, isn't it?
You're saying besides Pandemic?
No. Did
Matteo.
Oh, Matteo. Correct.
According to Board Game Geek, this is his only design
credit. Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Which is cool. Anyway, go on.
This game is cooperative. It does 1 to 4 players. I have only played the physical version of this game. I think you guys have only played the digital version. Is that correct?
I've played both now.
Oh, okay.
I have only played the digital version on Board Game Arena.
So the theme of the game is that there's 4 different great world powers that are working together to try to cut carbon emissions before you do one of the loss conditions. And you win the game when your carbon emissions are hit the tipping point. You're not emitting carbon anymore. There's less carbon being produced than what's offsetting it. And then you have to survive one last end round phase and then you win the game. I guess start off with what's your guys's initial reactions to the game?
So I'm going to give two reactions, because my initial reaction, I saw it briefly at Board Game Geek Con, which Trevor and I both attended with our families last year.
Yes.
And it has a very unique color palette. I mean, it is like very bright pastels, right? And
yeah. Okay.
And initially I was just kind of like, oh, that's kind of a weird looking game. And I don't. And so then I didn't, like, we literally just kind of passed it by in the hot games room. Right. Then I played it on BGG Arena and I'm like, I am such an idiot for for not trying this game, because I just find it to be a great follow up to Pandemic, basically. Right. I think it's a really well done game in that similar vein. Right. You know,
real so, quick. As a sign of how much I was interested in / excited to play this game, I was the one who read the rules. I brought the game. I read the rules for the game.
Holy cow! What is happening? I'm sorry, folks. Global warming has happened. The planet's in shambles. Over. Yep. We're
dogs and cats are living
what
together.
What is happening? Pandemonium. All right.
So that happened.
We're done being so, funny about it.
Because I was the one to read the rule book, I can tell you that it explicitly says in the rule book that some of the inspiration for this game are games like Terraforming Mars and Race for the Galaxy, which happen to be two games that I hear are popular favorite among some of the hosts here on the show.
Gosh, I'm trying to think. Yeah, I guess I could see the Race for the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw it. To me, this was... I think that those two, little less so Terraforming Mars, I probably would have put it closer to Pandemic.
But I agree that it's much closer to Pandemic, but, you know, the way you can build out the card piles, that's the only thing that feels a little Terraforming Mars-y to me.
Sure. And I'm a well-known Pandemic hater. So when I say that, let me preface it by saying I'm not saying that in a negative light. I just felt it had a similar feel to Pandemic, but I did not have the same reaction to this game that I did to Pandemic.
So one of the big differences, in my opinion, between Daybreak and Pandemic is that you get to do some engine building stuff with your play area that is kind of fun, which is a big difference from Pandemic.
Yeah, a huge difference.
One of the things that's interesting with the game is one of the loss conditions. You only have 6 rounds to win the game, and so there is kind of a pretty hard cap on how much time you have to try to reach the goals you need to hit. And the other thing that's interesting is, so the four powers that you could play are China, the United States, the European Union, and then basically the rest of the world. And one of the things that I like quite a bit about the game is that each of the starting powers have different starting cards that they're economies that you're building up, or your engine that you're fine-tuning. They will have different specialties, or they'll have different weaknesses as well, that relates obviously to how they are in the real world. And so, for example, you know, the United States has a lot of car emissions that are going on, and so one of your goals is going to be to lower your various emissions. You're trying to ramp up your green energy production, ramp down your legacy power emitting plants, stuff like that. You have to keep up with rising demand as well. Excuse me. But that was one of the things that I liked quite a bit, was just each of the starting power, or the starting countries, having different cards that they're all starting with to start their economic engines with, I think was something that is pretty fun. It makes it more realistic to real life and adds replayability, I think.
Yeah, the other thing, I don't know if you've gone to this level yet, Jay, but as far as replayability, the other thing that
the game does really well is there are, we I think they call them challenge cards.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And so they, excuse me, they can really ramp up the difficulty. So when you get a little too full of yourself, just add some of those to the mix.
One other. So let's maybe talk a little bit about how the economic engine works for some of the mechanics of the game. Josh, do you want to explain some of that?
Yeah. So basically at the start of every turn, you reveal one forecasted crisis, and then there are two other at the start of the game, there are two other unknown crises that are going to come. Then you flip up to what they call global projects, and you as a group need to decide which global projects you want to pursue. And they usually have like a cost to activate, and then they do things like, you know, provide ways to for a little extra protection in certain areas, or they provide different ways to get rid of different carbon emissions, or they make nuclear power or solar power more efficient. You know, just there's quite a few little global effects they can have. And then after that, the main meat of the game is the action phase is you play the cards that are in your hand in a variety of ways. You can either add them to the top of a stack to then become the action that that stack can do, you know, which might be, again, creating energy or reducing dirty energy or getting rid of carbon emissions or providing, I just drew a blank on what are the protections called? Resiliencies, right? Like, does your nation have social resiliencies or infrastructure resiliencies or ecological resiliencies? Anyway, so that would be playing a card on top of the stack, or you can tuck a card behind the stack, which may empower whatever its current action may add to the power or the efficacy of whatever that thing's stack is. Again, you could pay some cards to trigger certain global projects. You can also spend cards sometimes to mitigate or get rid of certain crises cards. I feel like I'm forgetting one other thing. What's one other thing? Well, you could spend the cards. Sometimes you'll spend the cards for the actions of a stack, right? Like a stack might say, spend a card and reduce your dirty energy production by the number of green symbols on this stack, right? So I think that's all the things you can use stuff for, right? And so it's interesting because you can really play simultaneously. We've noticed that as you have more players, you really do need to have conversations across the table to be like, okay, look, I'm getting ready to start this nuclear program. So if you might not need to focus as much on energy because we have this global project that lets me pass clean energy over to you. So let me be the energy producer for the world and you guys work on cleaning stuff up, right? So that's kind of interesting because I've played this thing a ton online solo because, I mean, it's just for me has become a pretty fun just kind of solitaire exercise too. And then anyway, after everyone's taken all their actions, then you go through a phase where you see how much carbon is everyone emitting. Then you see how much carbon sequestration you have, which comes in the form of like forests and oceans and sometimes other like certain card stacks might reduce carbon emissions, that kind of stuff. If you've gone to the, you know, into the negative in terms of total carbon produced, then you trigger the potential win condition. If not, then you go, well, regardless, then you go through the crises. You reveal all crises and they can have a variety of effects, you know, moving you closer to different loss conditions usually. And then rinse repeat for 6 rounds. I'm sure I forgot something there, but that's kind of walking you through a whole round there.
Yeah. So I do think that the mechanic, so there are obviously multiple games where a card having a tag is an important mechanic in like how many tags you
right.
How many tags you have will affect how an action performs. I think it's interesting in this game that the basically each you have basically five silos of actions or action cards, I guess.
Right.
Cards that can do things. And I think it's the mechanic is clever where your card can either go on the front and it will give you a new ability that it becomes the thing that you can do with this silo, or you can stick it in the back and add to the tag total that you have in that silo. And so I think that's a really clever mechanic as well. I'm kind of curious. I feel like this is a really well done game.
So I want to mention one thing that.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to mention one thing that we didn't go or talk about yet, which I thought is a really interesting kind of decision by the publisher and everything. But like, this thing is very environmentally friendly. Like,
yes.
You know, the pieces are produced. The
it's not wrapped.
There's no plastic bags. Yeah, it's like
cardboard,
chipboard boxes for the pieces and stuff, right? Yeah. Like, so just kind of an interesting choice.
Yeah.
That's information that I did not know because I played it only digitally.
Oh yeah, because you haven't played the physical copy, right?
Yeah, I'm being the most green of all of you.
Yes. I'm curious. You guys, I think, probably have a little bit more tapped into the board game community than I am. But my impression is that this game hasn't really broke through the chatter very much. And do you think
that's much as I expected it to?
True or false?
I don't see a lot of posts about it in the Board Game Geek Facebook group. I don't see a lot of chatter about it in any of the other board game groups I'm in. I don't really frequent the Board Game Geek site itself, but I don't really recall it being in the hotness on Board Game Geek all that much either.
Yeah, so
I can't decide if it's like a co-op burnout, maybe.
I
wouldn't be shocked by that.
I don't know if it's that or if I were to, you know, make my wild ass guess as to why it's not breaking through, I would probably more say that I just feel like there's such a deluge of different games or content that it's really difficult even for good games to break through sometimes.
It's interesting to me just looking at the hotness right now. A good example of a similar themed game, completely different mechanics, but similar theme, that is straight up worse, in my opinion, but is currently at a much higher position on the hotness scale than this game. And that is Earth.
Oh, geez. Uh-huh. Totally worse.
Yeah, and Earth has gotten a lot more traction than this game, and it is a straight up worse game. Like, I don't even get the whole point of Earth. It's not really, I guess in a way the mechanics are similar. You're trying to create these combos of cards, right? But the combos of cards are not very satisfying. I don't really enjoy Earth, and maybe I need to give it a second chance, but in my experience of the, you know, couple of games I played, it was not engaging. It didn't feel like I was building a combo. It didn't feel like Race for the Galaxy. And this game probably doesn't have as good a combos as Race for the Galaxy, but it's close.
Well, what I think is interesting about Earth, I agree with you, Trevor. And part of it is that there's almost too many potential combos.
Yeah, it's hard to build the right combo, I guess.
Yeah, it's so random what the potential combos that you get are. Daybreak feels a little tighter to me in that way.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. But, so you said you thought content, Jay?
No, I guess my analogy would be comparing it to a good game, or sorry, a good TV show that has released on a streaming platform and it kind of never really takes off. And you know, there's a lot of factors to that, but at least one of the factors is that there's just so many shows right now that are available on all the different streaming platforms.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. That does make sense. I see what you mean now by, you know, the breakthrough challenge.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Jay, how many plays of it do you have under your belt now?
Not very many. Only like two or three.
Okay.
I guess one thing I'm curious on, Josh, is the only one of the three of us that has played both the digital and the physical implementation. A comment that I saw, I think maybe on Reddit, was someone said that essentially they said that they struggle if a game has a really good implementation on Board Game Arena or some of the other sites, that they then have a difficult time getting into the physical, playing the physical game with her friends.
I could see that happening. You're really denying yourself a valuable different experience if you don't play it physically. Because just an example, which I think you'll understand, Jay, from having played it in that way, is to physically have to like pile the little carbon cubes onto the thermometer is way more traumatizing in real life, right? Than having the computer just make a few clicks and has happened. And so, that's one thing. And then again, I found it. I mean, the thing about playing it online is I have played it almost exclusively asynchronously online, right, Trevor? Uh-huh. You and I played several games of it, didn't we?
No, I don't think I played any with you.
Oh, you didn't play with me? Okay. I played a ton with my brother asynchronously, right? And then I played with my oldest daughter and her husband and my youngest son twice on BG Arena, but sitting in the same room. Like, we were each at a computer, right? So it was like a LAN party. And again, that was a different experience, because just sort of having the conversations collaboratively in real time really does kind of affect the experience. So I do find it, it's interesting, because I'm playing it less online. I think partly because I've had some, well, maybe I'm kidding myself. I was gonna say partly because I've had some real life playthroughs of it, but also it could be that I'm in the middle of a legislative session and I'm a fool. So maybe that, that might have something to do with it too.
Maybe that.
So I've played it 8 times, according to Board Game Arena. I played those 8 games over the course of just 2 days, and I played all of them with my wife, and we played all of them in the same room at the same time.
Okay.
And I will tell you that I don't think the game would be very good playing with people who you were not communicating with. So playing asynchronously with people online that you're not, you don't know, or you're not playing at the same time, or you're not in a, say, a Discord chat with them or something, some way to communicate about moves and other things. So my wife, sat 3 feet away from me while we did it, and we communicated a lot. And I do see how the game could change quite a bit based on the number of players.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, with my wife and I, we played a lot. I would say we played a lot of the rounds solo, but we kind of left a few decisions to the very last because we needed to interact for those. So there was a lot of interaction, but because there was only 2 players, and you kind of knew what was in your teammates' tableau to some degree, and it was easy to kind of keep track of what they had, you kind of knew what they could and couldn't do for you. And so we could play quite a bit on our own without, conversing, but there was always a point in each round where we'd have to go, okay, how do we handle this, or how do we do this? When you'd get to 4 players, I'm sure that would be far more difficult to say, hey, I've got this problem and I need somebody to help me solve it. And you'd have to kind of go around the room, and then you're going to run. I mean, even in 2 players, we ran into the situation where, I'd be like, well, I could have helped you with that, but I didn't know you had this problem at the beginning of the round. And now I've already, used my resources that I would have had to be able to deal with that. So that would probably get far worse at 4 players. It's interesting. We played those 8 games over 2 days. And then we were like, okay, that was fun. We had a lot of fun. And then we never played it again.
So yeah, I would go back in a heartbeat. I mean, the 3 of us should do one online asynchronous, because I would be interested for Jay to experience it that way now too.
I think we would, while it may be quote unquote asynchronous, I think it would be best to do it over Skype or Discord to talk.
Sure. Yeah.
And just
play, I didn't realize that. Yeah, like you haven't done it asynchronous.
No, I mean, the game mode was set to asynchronous.
But we were sitting
at the same place, taking our turns, doing everything together.
Yeah, one
but
of
I,
the
I just don't think it. I don't think it's a very good experience if you play it purely asynchronously.
Yeah,
I will. Well, I should look. Hold on, I'll get on my Board Game Arena account. How do I look at how many times I've played it?
If you click on your profile thing.
Okay, I'm viewing my profile.
View your profile. Then you go to.
I've played 581 games on Board Game Arena, for the record.
Yeah.
Okay. Then where do I go?
From there, if you let's see. Okay, click on Games Played, the Games Played tab, and then it'll show you, it has a list of all your games as you go down and how you did. Mm-hmm. If you look at the upper right hand corner, it's going to say your user account's games history.
Okay.
Click on that. It's going to create the full history. Oh, now history.
I can go. Okay.
And then you can just go to the by game and you can type
why
in.
Why are these games not alphabetical? What's happening? Oh, I see what I'm. Okay.
Just,
I
can type you're not going to do it alphabetically. You're going to type Daybreak.
I have played 76 times.
Holy.
I've won 36 times. I wish now that I could sort it by how many of those are solitaire, because I bet at least 20 of them are solitaire.
Well, you let's can. See. You can't sort them, but you can look through them to see how many are solitaire. The fact that you've played that many and we haven't played together actually blows my mind.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there. I got fixated, I think.
Were a bunch of these played with, like, kind of LAN style?
No. Probably half of them are with, like, that's what I'm saying. Probably half of them are with my brother.
Wow. I'm surprised you guys played that many asynchronously.
Yeah, and we had this, we had a moment where we were, like, always playing with the challenge cards. And then we started losing over and over again. And my brother's always the one who sets up the games, right?
Yeah.
And he stopped setting it up with the challenge cards. And I was like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm tired of losing. Wow. Yeah, okay. Well, that's interesting glance into one man's psyche.
Well, you can tell your brother then I'm slightly offended that he never included me.
I will do so. Anyway, I digress. I'm distracting us from the ultimate conversation. Is it time to grade this thing? Where are we at?
Let's do a speed grade.
Okay. So, first category is design. So, obviously, initially, I poo-pooed the colors, but I just think the game should get high marks for a unique color palette, and it really is beautiful. We didn't really talk about it. The artwork on the cards is stunning. Like, it's kind of a slightly different style, but it really is kind of this hopeful aesthetic. And then one of the other things that's really cool is every card has a QR code on it. If you scan the QR code, it will take you to rules explanations of the card, and then also, like, actual science and history about the card, right? So
yeah, that part blew Tony Riccio's mind.
It was nuts, right? It's really cool, really well done. But so I honestly, I'm gonna go all the way to a 9. This thing, again, it's a great co-op. It's less prone to alpha gaming or quarterbacking than a lot of co-ops, but it's still there. It doesn't solve that problem, you know, wholeheartedly.
I can go along with a 9.
Okay, Trevor.
I guess I don't have that much love for it.
I mean, you're famously a pandemic hater, so, like, it totally would make sense that this pulls it down.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like the theme is a little too lightly painted on. I feel like the mechanics are interesting, but not, like, exceptional. It's a good game. I mean, I'm a little surprised that it hasn't picked up more traction. I'd probably only give it an 8.
Ah, dang, I tried to guess. I was guessing a 7, but
yeah, I hate sevens. I hate this.
Sevens are forbidden by us.
And I can't give him a 6, so.
Okay, so on to time management. This one I will give a lower score. I will probably go so far as to say, I'll go to a 7. And the reason I say that is games can go longer than I think they should.
I feel like there's a strange dichotomy with this, because on the one hand, I can see your point, but on the other hand, there's only 6 rounds, and there are several times where it feels like I'm just starting to get my economic engine humming.
And then the game's over.
Well,
I guess what I, the, maybe it's when I have seen the games
stated time
go long,
on the
it's analysis games. Paralysis that does it.
Oh, sure.
I'm going to agree with Josh, but I'm going to agree for a different reason. I don't think it's just analysis paralysis. I have experienced there are times when you can wish for wishes. That literally my turn in this 6
keep
turn
drawing.
Game.
Do another action. Like that,
yes.
You mean?
Yes. Yeah. Like I've felt like my turn in one turn, when you get to like turn 5 or 6 you're wishing for wishes. It's almost like you cannot be stopped. You'll go on for hours. It gets a little ridiculous. Especially in a situation where if you draw the right cards, you can play, like, you'll get one that'll say draw this many cards and look for this type of card. And if you get one of those that lets you draw a whole bunch of cards and you get lucky and you get a whole bunch of cards, and in one of the cards that's in your hand, there's a card in it that basically is the same card, and you can play it on top of the card you just played and do it again. Like, there's times where I felt like my wish for wishes had no bounds.
Oh, so one thing that's funny is one of the mechanics you're talking about is the wish for wishes is the stacks where as you build certain symbols up, you can draw more cards, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In the physical game, it is different than what's on BG Arena. It says those additional card draws only happen at the beginning of the round. So if you build a stack up during the middle of the action phase, doesn't matter until the start of the next round. Yeah. And so
my wish for wishes would not have worked. But there was definitely there's still some combinations that could take you a long way.
Yeah. No argument there. I think you're hitting that right on the nose. Jay, what was your time management number? Sorry.
I'll still go with an 8, I think.
Okay.
In light of knowing the Board Game Arena was not correctly programmed while I was playing it, I'm going to recuse myself from giving this a grade. But I still think that there are situations where, especially on the lower difficulties, where the later turns can take a really long time.
Sure. Okay, next up is repeatability. Well, I've played it. So I basically played this game 80 times. 76 on BG Arena and 4 IRL in the meat space, as the kiddies say.
I'm surprised that you got that many plays out of it. Not because I don't think it's good. It's just, I don't know. That's a lot of plays.
Board Game Arena Board Game Arena skews those numbers so terribly. Like, I should see how many plays of Carnegie I have. Do you got a guess, Trevor?
Not nearly that many.
I bet it's
I don't have a guess. I'm guessing 50.
Okay, let's find out, because now I just gotta know.
Well, I gotta know. Have you played it with other people besides me, or just me?
No, it's just you. I only play with you.
Oh, then probably 50.
I only like to suffer. 29. Only 29. That's way less than I expected. I'm sad by that.
Yeah, but it's a much longer game.
You're right. It is longer. But I do have... There are a couple games in there with my brother until he got tired of you just absolutely stomping his face in. And I love that I have... Of those 29 plays, Jake, can you guess how many of those are a victory for Josh?
By the way.
How many are what?
A victory for Josh. How many times have I won?
One.
Sad. How come you knew that? Just automatically? You couldn't even guess like 3, maybe 10% even?
Because you said you just celebrated.
Oh, the one victory.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I played my guts out and I blocked Trevor like every chance I could get. And it still was only by like 9 points.
Yes, he won by 9 points.
Screw that game. I'm never playing it again until Trevor and I finish our current game. Anyway, yeah. So the BG Arena, and honestly, the solitaire plays is why I have so many of those plays, Jay, to that question.
Yeah, yeah,
so anyway,
yeah.
I'm going to give the repeatability a 9, but that's just for me. I would totally understand if somebody was like, no, I've got 8 games of it and I'm done, and that's probably a good average, you know, 5 or 6. Like, not that I'm trying to tell Trevor what his score should be.
I actually agree that this game really caught me. Like, it was fun. I enjoyed trying to come up with the combos. It was massively repeatable. Like I said, we sat down, played it once. My wife and I did. Got thrashed the first game.
As one does.
And instantly played a second one, and ended up playing pretty late into the night, and then got up the next day, and we stopped mid-game because it was late, and then got up and did it again the next day. And so, I mean, we played 8 games over the course of...
Just a few days, kind of thing.
I mean, honestly, over the course of probably 5-6 hours total.
Wow, okay.
It was 3 or 4 hours one night, and then got up and played 3 or 4 hours the next day, and then that was it. And I think that we would go back and gladly play another. It's just I think maybe we got tired of our particular strategies. Like, I think the two of us kind of got in this groove where we each had our individual strategies and a way to put them together. And it felt like we were crushing the default difficulty and getting crushed by any of the challenge cards.
Mm-hmm.
just at least to some degree. I mean, I think we might have won one of the challenge card games, but it was clear that it was a little bit more difficult, and we had other things going on at the time. So,
okay. So, sorry, what were your numbers on repeatability, gents? Sorry, we're not speed scoring very good, Jay. That's my fault, I think.
Yeah, sorry. 10.
Jay?
I'll also say 8 so far, but I'm right at the start of playing it, so I don't know.
My fun on that is 8. I mean, I've gotten a ton of fun out of it, so.
I'll go 9. This is, like, basically right in my wheelhouse.
Yeah, clearly, since you'll read the rules for it. Stunning, right. Still stunned by this. Trevor?
Sorry, what are we grading? Fun?
Fun, yep.
I had a blast. It's 8, probably, maybe 9.
Overall, weirdly, I'm going to give the overall a little higher even. I'm going to go 9 for my overall. This is a really solid game for me. And part of what's funny is, I don't think we talked about this, but it gave me the same vibe as when I first played Pandemic. And, like, I have this memory of the first time I played Pandemic. It was my wife. I mean, that was a long time ago. My wife and I hadn't been married that long. And I got her to play it, like, 7 times in a row. And then I broke her spirit because we lost 7 times in a row. So I was like, okay. I can't do this with Daybreak. Just slow down, Wheeler. Just spoon feed it a little bit, you know? Anyway, what's your overall, Jay?
I'll probably go with a 9 as well.
Okay, and Trevor?
There's something off here. I don't know what it is. I think it's partly that I never felt like I was actually fighting global warming or
oh, you felt disconnected from the theme. Okay.
I felt disconnected from the theme. And okay. The truth is, I mean, I'm the least likely probably on the podcast to even care about the theme, mm-hmm. but I do like theme in my games, and I just never felt connected to the theme in the game. So that's my biggest complaint. So whatever that earns.
Go ahead and give your number, and then I'll comment on that.
Probably an 8.
Okay,
that's still really good.
It's a quibble.
I guess one comment on it. Josh kind of mentioned this already, but I do think the physical components help a little bit with filling the theme a little bit more. And another thing that it explicitly states in the rule book is that one of the hopes of the designers is that people can play this game and feel like, climate change isn't hopeless, or that people can, band together and try to do things. And I think that there's some of my play group that did actually kind of get that feeling from it. And so,
like, they were hopeful after.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. I do like to hear that. Yeah, because I do think it tries to paint a sort of more optimistic picture that, we can get it done. It sort of says to me, like, yeah, it's going to be challenging. And yeah, like, if you don't cooperate just right, then you are screwed. But anyway, that's all.
Yeah. All right. What's left? Is it go or no go?
It's go or no go. I'm assuming it goes.
We're obviously all goes.
Yep. It goes to different degrees. Oh, we didn't talk about audience. Like, I was going to say, like, I think it's pretty family friendly, and you would have to have people who are at least a little into board games, though, I think, because.
Yeah, I feel like this is even, and maybe more so because of, I guess, the table captain aspect, but I feel like a game like Camp Pandemic, I can play with more board game newbies than this one.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Pandemic is easier entry than this would be.
Yes.
So,
yeah, I will admit that I'm not sure I care about that.
Sure. I'm doing a meeting with some friends on Saturday, and they are the type of friends who, this is within something that they would be very interested in,
uh-huh.
but they're not really gamers. And so before I played it, I thought that, maybe it would be pretty good, but no, it's more complex than they would get into.
Yeah, I feel like, if Pandemic is your 100 level courses, that this is almost 300 level, at least 200 level. So. All right. Well, do you have something for us, Jay?
I
just want my Lisanal meme.
Yeah, I can't remember. I don't think I shared this one Last time I thought I teased that I was going to share it coming up. Let me check the Chain Attack Discord real quick to see if I did.
What? Fact checking? What's going on here?
I know. I mean, is there anything more on brand than Chain Attack doing the same meme over and over?
No, there is not.
Okay, so let me find it real quick. So this is the okay, same meme format. On the top, though, instead of having Paul Atreides doing something and Stilgar on the bottom proclaiming Lys
Al-Dor. Yeah, okay.
This one, the top panel is a drawing of Lisa Simpson from The Simpsons, Bart's sister. Yes. Okay. She's at the table eating dinner. She has blue eyes and she has a nose piece.
A still suit.
For nose. The still suit. Okay. Mm-hmm. And she says, "I can see through time." And then Stilgar says on the bottom, "Lisa Al Ghaib."
Dune has become the most hilarious bonding between my youngest daughter and myself. Like I refer to her as the Lillian Al Ghaib all the time now, and we just freaking we just make Al Ghaib jokes to each other all the time. And the other day I was wearing a hoodie and she referred to me as the Shai Hulud, and she just freaking she has really connected with Dune. Because of Timothy Chalamet, but
sure. Has she read the book yet?
She's probably like halfway through the first book, but she's going slowly. We were telling my son-in-law the other day, I didn't realize that he didn't know the story of when I told my wife all I wanted for Christmas was for her to read the book. Oh my gosh, that was some funny memories.
I've heard your wife tell me that version of the story.
Yeah, she'll be like, I made it 8 pages.
All right, well, let us know.
I have to
go ahead.
Before we close out, I have to give an update.
Okay.
I am deep into Bellatro right now.
Oh my gosh, what have you wrought today?
That is what I've been playing in the background while we've been talking. So I will continue this update next episode.
Is it so far thumbs up?
I think it does. It definitely has the poker theme, obviously. I'm just not sure how much poker for a true poker player. I'm not sure how much it really really scratches that itch, because I don't think it does.
I will provide the update that I did finish the Cosmic Wheel Sisterhood about midway through the episode.
Oh my God. You too.
So I'll pick up Bellatro after this, Trevor. But easy. Cosmic Wheel Sisterhood was a great probably 8 hours of my life. I would even play it again, because just building the cards is so freaking hilarious. All right.
All goodbye, right. Jay. Goodbye.